Yes, welcome along to Sports Day. The teams for the prelim finals not far away, and the mail is the Cats are going in unchanged, but the Lions are considering one or possibly two. Port Adelaide and Richmond also likely to make a change, so stay tuned. We'll bring them to you as soon as possible. It's a huge weekend for the AFL, and given 5 months ago, it looked a genuine chance the season wouldn't even get restarted. So it's a huge weekend that we should all celebrate. If you love the game, this is a great part to really get yourself involved, even if you're not barracking for anybody. Tomorrow, it's Port Adelaide versus Richmond. Then, of course, on Saturday, the Lions versus Geelong. And Sunday, an historic Brownlow medal, a Sunday via Zoom Brownlow medal. It will really be quite fascinating to see how that goes. And, Scoop, when you look at the games and the Brownlow medal, it seems that the only certainty, the only one you can probably invest in with any sort of certainty, is the Brownlow medal. Lachie Neale would appear to be across the line, according to everybody, but there have been some major turnovers. Major boilovers, even in the Brownlow medal.
Hello, Jared. Yeah, you remember a few, I think. And I must say, I'm becoming more increasingly worried about if Lachie is going to win or not, because you have been questioning it for 7 or 8 weeks. Did he finish the season as well as he started it? And as we know, as we saw in the Australian Open when you were talking about the coronavirus, your crystal ball has been strangely right all year. Just on the changes that you mentioned, so Ken Hinckley did say in his presser today that unlikely to be any changes.
Yeah.
I know that that still may mean that he might flick the switch and that he could pull a change late. Marshall and Dersmet, the two Saw boys, have both trained well, so you would think that they will name themselves unchanged. And Richmond, really interesting. Do they bring Marby Ochoa in, given the ruck dominance of Port Adelaide? And does that mean that the fairy tale story of last final series, Marlon Pickett, is the man that misses out? I'm not saying he is. I'm just saying it's not as though there are blokes putting their hand up to be dropped at Richmond, because they're all in good form. Cam Ellis-Yeoman, probably Chris Fagan's biggest question in the other prelim.
Yep.
Do they go in unchanged? Do they bring Ellis-Yeoman in, who played in round 18 against the Blues?
Who would go out?
Well, that's the biggest question. I think Ellis-Yeoman played because Berry was injured.
Yeah.
Berry's since come in. He's obviously not going to be dropped.
Some people questioning Coleman's performance.
Yeah, Keaton Coleman, yep.
I think he's got a lot of supporters at the coaching
and
level.
He's got some X factor as well. I know he was quiet in the last final, but hard to change that team. And I'm with you. I think Chris Scott and Geelong go in unchanged. But it's just, it's fever pitch, really, for the prelims.
13-13-32 is the number. Can you think of a boil over that could come to fruition on a Sunday night? If it's not going to be Lachie Neale, who do you think may come from the bleachers to knock him off? He is the shortest price favourite in history, Lachie
Neale. That's right, yep. He's, I think, below $1.40 or something ridiculous. The obvious one, almost a decade ago now, I can't believe it's been that long, with a boil over was when Chris Judd knocked off Dane Swan.
Okay.
I think in 2011, his Brownlow medal for Carlton. But you probably remember a few more, Jerry.
I reckon the biggest boil over that I can remember, and I reckon I was about 10 or 12 or 13 or something at the time, was in the early 70s. It might have even been 74 when Keith Gregg got up. I mean, Keith Gregg went back-to-back with Brownlow medals, or he was a dual Brownlow medal.
Wasn't KB supposed to win one?
KB was the red-hottest of hot favourites, and there was a stink afterwards at the Brownlow medal. There was a bit of a push and a shove. In fact, I think there may have been a blue on the outside.
This is before the days of video cameras and social media, by the way.
There was
unluckily.
There was telly there for memory, I think, but 13-13-32, who is going to create the big boil over? In fact, our producer has got Ash Brown on the line, who's been around as long as I have. They've done a big special on the Brownlow medal previewing.
Are you calling
this
Ash old, Jared?
He's old. He's as old as me. And he joins us on the line just to go through a couple of the big boil overs in the history of the Brownlow. Welcome to you, Ash.
Good evening, boys. On my 5 minutes notice you gave me, I've come up with an article I wrote about the 74 Brownlow a few years ago. So I'm now the oracle. So fire away whatever you want to know about the biggest boil over in living memory of the Brownlow.
Well, it's got that place in history, hasn't it? KB was the shortest of short price favourites. And Keith Gregg wasn't even in the sort of reckoning, and yet the great Brownlow medalist from the Kangaroos, who dominated the wing for years, He, I guess, announced himself with that big win.
Yeah, well, he won in 73, and he backed up and won in 74, and as the league did back in those days, they didn't do it game by game, so they saved the drum to the end, and he won on the last, his win was confirmed on the last vote of the night. So he got 27, and I think he might have beaten Gary Dempsey on 23. I'm not sure if KB even came second. What happened afterwards was that Tiger secretary, the great, late great Alan Schwab,
yep,
and a committeeman called Charlie Priestley started booing and hissing in the room at the Southern Cross. And then they went outside to the vent, and they were challenged by Ron Joseph, the equally legendary North Melbourne secretary. And Priestley and Joseph almost came to blows outside. And, of course, being the Brownlow night, it was pretty much seen by everybody and made a huge story in the back page of the Herald the next day that what a disgrace of Brownlow was. And Mike Sheen was quoted Alan Schwab saying, "It's a joke. Greg deserved to win a Brownlow, but not this year." And that was such a boil over, and it led to a few inflamed passions. Richmond, of course, was a very arrogant, entitled club at the time. I think that year they won all three premierships and all three grades. They were king of the hill, and they didn't like the fact that KB never won the Brownlow. KB was very very sheepish about it all. He was quite embarrassed, I think, by the actions of the club.
Well, there you go. I was 13 at the time, and my understanding was it was his first Brownlow that was the boil over, but it was his second Brownlow.
Yeah, the second Brownlow was the one that I think caused the Richmond people to sort of say, well, you know, it's enough's enough. You know, it's all right for Greg to win one, but he shouldn't be winning two at the expense of Bartlett.
Well, stay with us, Ash, because we need your encyclopedic mind to potentially help us out here. But Richard's in Berwick. Welcome to you, Richard. You've got a boil over as well.
Yeah, Shane Mo Woden.
That was, 2000-ish?
Who was favourite that year?
Who was favourite, Richard?
I can't remember now, but everyone went, wow.
Everyone went, wow. Ash, can you remember who the favourite was in 2000? Was it Cooter?
Might have been Cooter.
It might have been the peak of Cooter's powers, actually, around then. Cooter was, at the top of his game in 2000. Woden was a surprise, absolutely. I think everyone was pretty shocked when he ended up winning the medal.
I reckon Andrew McLeod as well that year had a great year. I just have to go back through the actual poll.
Yeah, I think you're on the money there. Nice work, Richard. Thanks for your call. Mark's in South Melbourne. You got a boil over and a tip for us, Mark.
What about when legendary Brad Hardy winning the Brownlow? He was probably 35-1. The one at St Kilda, I reckon, what about Jack Steele? He's going to poll enormously well.
Yeah, he's got to be a real big chance, Ash. Jack Steele is one of those two or three players that have had really consistent years, backed it up by winning their club best and fairest, announced himself last year as a player to watch, third in the best and fairest for memory, won it clearly this year. And if there is going to be a boil over, it may well come from somebody like St Kilda, who won enough games to make the eight, but didn't have a lot of players taking lots of votes away from him.
Could Dusty win it?
I don't think this year. I'm not sure. I mean, Dusty could always win it. But I don't know if Dusty has stood out enough this year.
Noted vote getter, and stands out. And when he plays well, he's almost always best on ground.
Would Travis Boak be considered a boil over if he won it, Ash?
Well, he's had a very good year, hasn't he? But I don't think so, because I think he'd be in your top three or four along with Steele. I agree with Scoob. I think Dusty Martin, when Richmond win, Martin plays well. He dominates.
Okay.
And we just know the umpires love him, so I wouldn't be surprised if he polls really well. Perhaps not to win it, but Dusty would be up there, I reckon.
There'll be a point of the night halfway through where someone will just say, "You won't notice that Dusty's on, 11 votes from four games and he's second, And it's just like he's around the mark again."
So you got any other boil overs before you leave us, Ash, and give us your grand for your prelim final tips?
I think Dipper in 86 was a surprise. I know he tied with Diesel, but I think Paul Roos was might have been the favourite that year. And, everyone loved Fitzroy. They were the Cinderella team that year. And I think it was disappointment that Roosie didn't get up. That was probably the one that got away for him. In terms of the weekend, I have gone for Richmond and I've gone for Brisbane.
Richmond and Brisbane. So you're going for the AFL's preferred fairy tale grand final.
Gillen's got to him. I knew it would happen.
Luke Darcy went in big favourite, we're told, by a couple of callers in 2002. Finished eighth. Finished eight votes behind
Brooks,
Simon
Brooks
Blake.
Brooks has been on the phone, has he?
Yeah, Brooks.
He's going to be talking about Chris Grant soon enough.
Nice work, Ash. Thanks for jumping on the line. How far away from Caulfield are you and what tram number?
Well, I jumped off so I could get a better line to you boys. I'll jump back on the 64 tram now.
He's a man that puts others before himself. Good on you, Ash. The grand final record, by the way, comes out next week. And we've got, in fact, I think they're doing a dual copy, so that is great for the AFL record. You can look for the Australian-made logo to be sure it is authentically Australian-made. This is Sports Day for Kia and Red Energy. Well, don't go anywhere because a Richmond great, I think you can call him a Richmond great now, can't you, after two flags. And he could have almost won two Norms, Mr.
Two silvers.
Is he a two-time runner-up? Is that what you're calling
indeed.
Him? Okay. Basha Hooley, he's going to join us next on Sports Day. And welcome back to Sports Day. Of course, we are here for Kia and Red Energy. Always great to have a guy with a couple of premierships under his belt on the show, Jared, and he is going for a third. We speak of Basha Hooley, 218 games, two premierships with the Tigers.
And two runners-up,
of course, and the former Bomber to boot. He may even be going back. Let's get to him. Basha, welcome to you. It's an exciting time for the club once again.
Yeah, it is. Thanks for having me, first of all. And, yeah, as you said, very, very exciting times. I think, what's it, four now prelims in a row, which is something that we're extremely grateful to be part of, and our journey just continues to grow.
Just to clarify my suggestion of two runners up, I'm talking about Norm Smith medals. I reckon you were stiff a couple of times, Basher. Maybe you'll get a third time lucky if you get there.
Yeah, well, it's not obviously jumped the gun for me. It's and probably everyone in the same position would go with this probably same messaging, is that just being part of a great day and winning is something very, very special. And, for me, I guess my caliber of play is probably not, you don't expect to win those sort of awards. So you just play to have fun and do your best and hopefully get that, that piece of chocolate at the end where everyone hopes for.
Basha, you're playing alongside a lot of guys in that team who have been there and done it. You've won prelims and won grand finals. You've lost prelims as well. The team you're coming up against hasn't had that luxury of experience. Does it mean a lot or does it mean absolute bugger all when it comes to prelims on the big occasion?
Look, I think definitely it means bugger all because, if you look at us back in 2017, coming from a rough season the year before, we only went into the games or the games, particularly in final series, controlling what we can control. And, scoreboard took care of itself. So no doubt it won't be any different for, sides such as Port Adelaide and Brisbane Lions, where, their journey could start this year because, they've done some sensational work throughout the season and clearly have been, the best two teams of the competition. So, obviously it's all a myth, I think, providing you come with the right mindset and you believe what you've believed in all year.
How's the body, Basha?
Really good, really good. I mean, I was thinking about this during the week and assessing the season itself from an individual perspective. And the way I look at it is I've played 11 games this year with the shortened game time. So if you work it out across a full game, it's probably 7 or 8 games, maybe 8 games or so. So a third of the season, my body feels really good. It feels that way. And I feel like I've got so much more football in me this year.
We saw Nadal pick up his 13th French Open on the weekend, 20th all up at 34 years of age. LeBron James picked up a fourth title at 35 years of age. Do you draw inspiration from these elite athletes and say, well, basically, an age is only a number and you're able to do whatever you want to do at 32?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I probably don't draw my attention to those sort of athletes because I don't really follow different sports as such, but no, as you mentioned, like it is truly just a number. And you see many examples in the competition now who are playing, 35, 36, 37, and still going pretty well. So I think it's all got to do with your own body and how it handles, as years go on. So for me, year by year, and I feel really good at 32. So I'll quit, I guess I'll keep putting my hand up.
Do you reckon you'll be still playing in 3 more years' time?
Probably not, because I do look forward to the next phase of my life. Not that it's
so it won't be a physical decision. It'll be more just a I've had enough. I've done enough. Time for a new start.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I feel like I've you know, I've contributed a fair bit to the game from actually, you know, cultural awareness perspective, which is something I'm really passionate about building cultural awareness and understanding. So not that to say that I'm going to give up, but for me, there's much more life than football. And for me, it's life coaching and mentoring this next group of youth that are, you know, within my society or, I guess, my community.
Will you be at Richmond next year, Basher?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I reckon. They've offered me a year, which is great. I'm very grateful for this and just working through it. So okay. I've been there for 10 years now and, you know, I've established something far greater than just football at the club.
And I know that you confirmed on radio a couple of weeks ago that there was interest from your old club, Essendon. Was that at all tied to Adam Saad, who, you know, you've been on the record, you've both been on the record about talking about how close you are?
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know, to be quite honest. We never had that kind of discussion between me and Adam or even like further to with me and my manager and the management group at Essendon. So
yep.
I don't know where it was heading, but to be quite honest, it was something that flagged, which took me to a surprise to an extent. And yeah, I just felt like I just wanted to continue playing football and, you know, I had no other intentions, to be quite honest.
Talk about being a runner-up for a big award, the Norm Smith Medal, Jared. He's got the premiership medallions as well, but the last 24 hours been nominated for another award, one of four finalists for the 2020 Jim Stein's Community Leadership Award. Taylor Harris is there as well, as is Justin Westhoff, as is Lauren Spark. Basher, congratulations on that. I know it's a finalist, but you must be very proud of what you've been able to do off the field, particularly with your foundation.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely proud of that. And there's been a ton of work put in place from many, many different people, which, you know, I can't thank enough. And it's, yeah, something I'm very, very proud of. And to be nominated as one of the recipients, I'm very proud of that. And hopefully, you know, I am a winner because I feel like the money will go to something very, very important and across the board, I guess, charity organisations, etc.
Basher, can I finish on a football question? I think everybody is looking forward to this game with great anticipation, and I think everyone expects it to be a really hard-fought slugfest with a very close finish. So let's just paint the picture. The siren goes, the ball is in a Tiger's hands, and he's taken a mark. You're 3 points down. Only a goal will do. The person is 45 metres out from goal on about a 45-degree angle. Which Richmond player do you want to have that shot at goal to get you through to the grand final?
Might be him.
I'm happy for you to nominate yourself.
Definitely not me. Definitely not me, mate. I was talking about before with Dylan Grimes about kicking goals and stuff like that. I haven't had a shot on goal all year. At training, so
that doesn't mean you wouldn't be a good kick basher.
But I think you can't go past Dusty Martin. He's very confident with the ball. Great technique, and he's the one that probably would be best suited for that.
And Basher, as we let you go, what have you made of people sort of branding you the unsociable Tigers? Have you paid much attention to it?
Honestly, not one bit, to be quite honest, because we know. You know, we're a humble team, to be quite honest. We've been humble for 3 or 4 years, even with great success. And I think that's very important. You know, the more success you get, I think the more humble you should become. That's something that we can control within our four doors, and we truly believe in this.
Well spoken. Basher, good luck on Friday.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Basher Hooley there, two-time premiership player at the Tigers. Very close into Norm Smith medals.
Very close, indeed. Two great games.
Obviously, both won by Dustin Martin, weren't they? But Basher was very good at GWS in the first half, really, when the game was up for grabs, wasn't it? What's your answer to that question, Jerry? Who would you want?
Look, you couldn't dispute with Dusty. I'm a big fan of Jack Riewoldt's goal kicking. And I know that Tom Lynch. I know Tom Lynch had a bit of a stinker last week. I don't mind Tom Lynch having a shot at goal.
And Port Adelaide, if it's in their hands?
Port Adelaide, Robbie Gray's got great pedigree and great history.
Yes, he does. I forgot about Robbie. I've wiped that from my memory.
I'm happy with a Connor Rosie.
Wow. One of the youngsters.
Yeah,
no, I like Rosie. No fear.
Yeah, I think they've got a few guys with very little fear. But, I think that they're my couple.
It's preliminary finals eve. This is Sports Day for Kia and Renergy. Welcome back to Sports Day. It is time for a Tyre Power Sports Update.
You got any news?
It's the moment you've all been waiting for because the team news is in,
right,
for Richmond and Port Adelaide. Here are Richmond's team changes.
None.
And here are Port Adelaide's.
None.
Both unchanged.
Oh, boy.
I actually thought Richmond might make a change. Are you surprised that they didn't bring in an extra tall man?
No, I think they are more concerned about the ground level ball.
Yeah, which they've been so dominant at.
And Marvia Child really didn't set the world on fire in the last month of the game. So I think he was always a long shot to get in. But nevertheless, there's always another week to go.
And Port Adelaide, probably not as surprising, given that they only had really two sore boys in Marshall and Dersma. Mm. Marshall with the shoulder and Dersma had the concussion.
Yeah, Marshall finished strongly, get a bit of help to get through.
Yep.
But that said, I think Marshall is still a question mark. He may come out and kick six goals. Good luck to him. I just think they're a better side if Westhoff's in that team.
As opposed to Marshall.
Okay. He can go forward and he can go back. And if they are getting touched up in defence, I'm not sure who they put their hand up to.
Mm. There's not a whole lot of trade news floating around. We have spoken quite a lot about the Gold Coast interest with Adam Treloar. It's worth noting, as was talked about on Footy Classified last night, Jared, that Collingwood and Gold Coast did have a conversation last year about Adam Treloar because Collingwood wanted to pick one because they were trying to do a sneaky to get Matt Rowe.
Right.
And Treloar would have been the guy. I mean, he's on a lot of money, and I think at that stage they sort of knew that his partner might be going up to Gold Coast anyway to play. Anyway, it didn't come to fruition. I'm still not absolutely closing the door on that one.
Not closing the door. Yeah. You're making it the hinges squeak a little bit.
Ajar.
What about the Gold Coast? The commission have decided it's going to review its concessions for the Suns next year. How many bloody times can they do this? How many times can they set up a franchise and when all of a sudden they win two or three games, they just rip out the guts out of the concessions?
They did it with GWS.
Did it with the Riverina with GWS.
Which they shouldn't have done.
And they're going to come. That'll come back to bite them on the ass.
I agree with you completely.
I mean, this is a ridiculous notion. They are yet to win a flag, the Giants, despite the fact that they were going to win five in a row. The Suns have all of a sudden, they've got it competitive. That's it. And they're talking about taking away some concessions.
So for everyone listening, what Jared's talking about is that Gold Coast will now not be able to trade one of its future picks in this trade period coming up in the next few weeks because the commission decided it was going to review its concessions for the Suns.
Where's the push for that come from?
Other clubs, definitely. But I'm with you,
but
Jared.
This is why you have an independent commission that says to the clubs, no, you go and look after your own knitting.
Yeah.
We'll look after the expansion clubs. We've given them these things. We've set people up. People have moved state. Kids have been recruited.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we're going to pull the plug on them even before they go. Speaking of pulling the plug, the great Mike Sheehan pulled the plug.
Yes.
And Open Mike is now closed.
After 11 seasons. So his last episode, is it this week? Or is it next week?
I think it's next week.
Okay.
Yeah, it was recorded this week.
What a great show that's been.
It's been a great show. I mean, Open Mic doesn't define Mike, even though it was his last venture.
No,
I mean,
not at all.
He was a legendary reporter at the Sunday Age.
What's his best story that you remember, Jared?
Oh, his biggest story. I reckon when he broke the story, Peter Moore and Kelvin Templeton going from their both clubs to Melbourne on five-year deals, I think $100,000. It was a huge, massive, big story.
It was a water cooler story.
Oh, it was bigger than that. No, that was his biggest, and he's made a great contribution. So good on you, Mike. Enjoy your golf when you're able to enjoy your golf.
I think he's been enjoying his golf, to be honest. Not obviously in lockdown, he has been playing a bit of golf. Mm. Up next, umpire Matt Stevick.
What's happening with Clayton Oliver, by the way?
What do you mean?
Is he sweet?
I don't. What do you mean by sweet?
Is he staying?
I think he'll stay.
You keep telling me there's rumblings.
There are. Umpire Matt Stevick's going to join us next. Oh. It's his 400th game tomorrow night. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Kia and Ren Energy. There's been so much to talk about when it comes to prelims, stories about players, Jared. But of course, one of the most important people in the game are the people who officiate, the umpires. We spent a lot of this week talking about the umpires who are out. No Chamberlain, no Rosebery, but one man that will umpire AFL game 400 in tomorrow night's Port Adelaide Richmond preliminary final is Matt Stevick, just the sixth umpire to reach that mark. pretty impressive career, Jared, when you consider it's included 43 finals and 7 grand finals.
It's an amazing career, and we say congratulations once again, Matt, as we welcome you to the program. It's been a hell of a journey and plenty of years to go, hopefully.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. You know, I sort of reflect on the 17 years. I still remember vividly game one at what was Telstra game, I think, back then. 42 goals scored in that game between West Coast and the Bulldogs.
Yep.
So, you know, things change over time, and, yeah, just feel really privileged to be involved for so long.
You're the fifth umpire now to umpire 400 games. Can you reel off the other four?
Shane McInerney, he's the holder at the moment.
Yep.
Hayden Kennedy.
Yep.
My very good friend, Brady Rosebery, and there's Rowan Sawyers, and I think Steve McBurney got 401, didn't he, or 402? 95, so.
Reel those off pretty easily, Jared.
Well, when there's only four or five, I guess, and you've umpired with a few, and ironically, your boss right now, Hayden Kennedy, he is one of them.
Yeah, obviously had a long association with Hayden, and over many years, both as a reign umpire and now coach, and obviously, Buddy Rosebery and Shane McInerney, I did a lot of games with, and Rowan Sawyers was my coach for probably the first 10 years at AFL level. So, know them all well, and, yeah, sort of aspire to just continue to do the best I can and stay involved for as long as I can.
So, can I ask you, do you get nervous before big games? And there's only one game bigger than a prelim final.
Oh, absolutely, Jared. I remember, I think I'd done two grand finals and I hadn't taken the first bounce to start a granny. And
yep.
I felt, look, it was my time to step up. You know, I enjoy starting the games and just getting the game underway. But I got to say, the first time I did that, I think it was my third grand final, I've never been more nervous in my life.
Mm.
And I've also got to say, Thursday, Friday night when the head hits the pillow, the only thing I'm thinking about is getting that damn ball up straight. So, a bit more relaxed now, having, you know, obviously done quite a few games. But, yeah, you still get a bit edgy, and that's, I guess, part of what helps you perform.
Would you be more comfortable if you didn't have to bounce the ball, Matt?
Get asked this question a lot, Dan. Look, I think it's a great tradition of our game, but I also would fully support if the powers that be made a change or a call to eliminate the bounce. And, I mean, from a personal level, it's a hard skill to execute and do it really consistently. And if ultimately what I hope for the sport is that you have, you know, as big a pool of umpires as possible to be able to officiate and service the game as best as possible. And if we're not allowing, you know, as many to get to the top wholly and solely because they can't execute this skill, well, then I'd be in favour of, you know, making whatever decision needs to be made to, as I say, make sure there's as many young umps that can come through the ranks and keep pushing the standards of officiating to the highest possible level, because we're ultimately there to service the game.
It's been an interesting year. The umpires, like every other year, they have their ups and downs. This one in particular, given the reaction to Clarko's comments, and then Gil McLaughlin got involved in umpiring, there was an overreaction to what they said, or at least that's how it appeared, and then an overreaction to the reaction to the overreaction. It made the first part of the year a bit more difficult, but I've got to say, I reckon, I don't think I've seen the umpiring fraternity handle a finals campaign with such aplomb as this year. It's been relatively flawless.
Yeah, thanks, Jared. I mean, I don't think we're ever perfect. There's always aspects of games and moments in games and decisions that we reflect on and would like our time again, but I think most importantly, we're there to work really hard as a team. We've still got a job to do, and I still think, you know, you need to make decisions. But I've always, I guess, had a bit of a mantra that, you know, you can blend into the game, you can still play free kicks and do it in a manner that's subtle and, you know, allows the focus to remain on what should be two great contests this weekend.
Can I ask you, when you have reviews, given the grey area of the rules, can I ask you, when you have a review and Hayden says, I think you might have got this one wrong, do you ever say, Hayden, I think you've got that wrong and I was on the money? Because I've had plenty of discussions with Hayden, we've got a good relationship, and we've got different views on around the fringes of what should be paid and what shouldn't be paid. And I'm sure you guys must have to sometimes just suck it up and say, well, okay, you're the boss.
Yeah, look, all our, to the credit, all our coaches are really open to hearing from us. So they've got their vision and they might be at the game and or see it off the TV and form a view. They like to hear what we've got to say, what we saw. Now, sometimes they'll stick to their view and it might be, as you say, there's so many grey areas of the game. But then on some occasions, they'll hear you out and go, yeah, actually, I probably, in hindsight, agree that, you know, you've heard the right way there. So, look, it's not about trying to always prove you're right because, you know, I think, as you say, Jared, there's, you and I could sit down and have some beers, watch the game, and there'd be 50 decisions which we could debate, and they could be just marginally this way or that way. So, look, we even in our small groups, in our coaching sessions, we'll have some pretty heated debates over some of the calls we make. So, look, it's the great part of the game, but it also can be frustrating to the masses who love it as well.
Now, Jared, you and I have spent a lot of this week celebrating some of the great athletes in their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Rafa Nadal, of course,
yep. LeBron.
French Open number 13, was it?
Yep.
LeBron James, one with a third franchise. Sean Ryan, I think this weekend, gets to 350
Indeed.
Games, and he's hanging up the runners or the whistle at the end of the season. How many years left has Matt Stevic got in him, do you think?
Well, I've got a better back than Rhino. He's one of my best mates, and I tell you, if I'm still going at 45 with his back, I'll be doing well, but as long as I'm still motivated and have a desire to continue to learn, and you know, I don't think you've ever made it in this game. If you think you know it all, the game will run past you pretty quick. So I want to still be umpiring, you know, at a pretty good level. I'd hate to be still running around and feeling like someone's going to tap me on the shoulder. But yeah, look, I'd like to play a role in helping the next generation of elite officials come through, and again, still motivated and driven to do a really good job.
Well, I've got you penciled in for the grand final, Matt, so hopefully you don't stuff it up on the weekend, so you motor on through. But you've handled it so well over 400 games, Matt. We wish you well, and have a great night on Friday night.
Thanks, guys. Good calling.
Matt Stevic there. What an achievement. 400 games in tomorrow night's prelim between Port and Richmond. Still, Jared, just quickly, my favourite umpire finals story in one of the Brisbane Collingwood in the early 2000s games. Collingwood getting smashed halfway through the last quarter. Alan Dydock walks up to Darren Goldsmith in the middle of the ground and says, you know what, Darren, I reckon you blokes have been Scheisenhausen today.
All right.
Goldsmith turns around and says, thanks, Alan. We'll take that under advisement. You guys haven't been that great yourselves.
Look at the scoreboard.
Oh, back in the day where we still got umpires that have some personality. I think Matt's one of those.
I'm sure Ray Chamberlain is.
I think it's good for the theatre, to be honest, Jared. I don't think it takes away from the game at all.
No, I reckon last week you heard Sean Ryan chatting away. I think the senior guys are really good.
Yeah, great.
And the young blokes are, like all young blokes, learning the craft. The Rain Man is up next. Tommy Hackett from Ladbrokes to join us after the break here on Sports Day.
You are listening to Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Ahead this hour, aside from our prelim previews and one of the biggest days ahead on the spring calendar, both in the Everest in Sydney and, of course, the Caulfield Cup in Melbourne. That takes place on the weekend. Racing expert Andrew Bensley will help us find a winner or two as well. But it is, as I mentioned, time to welcome in our prelim final specialist, Jared, and a man who knows his program very well.
Indeed he does. He's the mastermind behind the successes of the four Eagles flags. Tim Jepp joins us on the line. Jeppy, we've given you a spell. We gave you a week off just to prepare for the prelim finals, but great
and,
to have
and,
you.
And lick his wounds.
And have you back after 7 days in remorse.
Yes, dressed in black. Not white, just black. Very disappointed, but no, they were terrific, Collingwood, and we were. It was a good game of footy.
It was.
But that doesn't help you when you lose by a point. You look back and that doesn't help anyone. But yes, no, I'm back, recovered now, better than ever.
Hey, Jeffy, just before we get into the prelims, and I know it's easier in hindsight, but the week of that Collingwood-West Coast game, Jared and I couldn't understand, you know, all the fanfare just going to the West Coast Eagles. We kept looking at the game and thinking, this is a toss of the coin. This is a 50-50 game. Did you guys feel that going in? I mean, I'm sure you would have had confidence the fact that you were at home, but, I mean, Collingwood have proven over the course of the last few years they're a pretty formidable team when they want to be.
Absolutely. And also the fact that they were getting so much flack from whatever it was coming from. It wasn't from us, but it was from everybody else about
the dirty pies. Yeah,
everything. And so they just used that, which you can just imagine what Simo was like with that, being an old North Melbourne boy. They love to come in from the underdog point of view. And he was sort of half preempting them. We knew they were going to come out firing, and they did. And to our side's credit, for a while there, it looked like we were going to get blown out of the water, but the boys fought back. We knew. We were disappointed with the way that it sort of all panned out.
The irony of it all is that goal-kicking accuracy probably got you across the line and was one of your great strengths in most of your victories, and yet it was the thing that deserted you most in that final game, in the final half.
Absolutely, and we'll be the same this weekend, and be the same in the grand final. And you know, we saw Geelong. Everyone raved about Port Adelaide's performance against Geelong last time. Geelong, if they'd kicked straight in the first quarter, even Hawkins kicks two of the first five shots he has at goal, it's a different game. Getting the score on the board and getting the, is massive for everyone's confidence, especially the team that's kicking the goal. When the boys are kicking them from anywhere, they feel as though they can't be beaten. But if they start missing them, and this is what we've seen Brisbane do a lot this year, so. It's going to happen. It's going to be a huge part of the preliminary finals, no doubt.
Well, let's start with tomorrow night's game, Jeppy. Port Adelaide versus the Tigers. I think anybody who goes back and looks at the previous match is kidding themselves, given that there's about seven players coming in for the Tigers and I think six coming in for Port Adelaide, and they are all top liners.
Absolutely. And that's the massive part of... You're good players. You need your good players in the team, and I'm sure that Richmond will be talking about that as how lucky we are that you're coming back into the side. They still have to play well. We had a lot of good players come back into our side last week, and it's a matter of how long they've been out for. You need one thing you do need in finals. You need players that are cherry ripe fitness wise and pressure wise. So, but Richmond have had these guys playing for a while now, so they'd be pretty confident, I'd say.
So, if you were running the show at Port Adelaide, if you tag, you've got to give up a bit to gain a bit. And clearly, Dusty, I think, is such a powerful player. I'm staggered that clubs don't tag him and put a hard tag on him. Now, others, run around and they let him go free. But
has anyone successfully done it that
well? Oh, absolutely. He's been knocked on the head a couple of times.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head who. I think Greenwood got him once or twice. I'm just trying to think. It's not as though... he's easily tagged, but I agree with you. Teams don't tag him enough.
Matty DeBoer might have got hold of him.
DeBoer, I reckon, has as well. Sorry,
so,
Jeppy.
If you've got somebody who's who is disciplined enough to sacrifice their entire game, and the coach actually says to him, "I don't give a stuff if you don't get one kick, Tom Rockliffe. You get out there and stop Dusty getting near the goals and setting up goals." To me, that's worth sacrificing your own man.
I totally agree, but I'm from the Bill Belichick school of do not let something that you know beat you. Mm. And at the end of the day, arguably Martin has been the best finals performed player
ever.
In Kevin, he's almost Kevin Bartlett like. Yeah. I mean, Kevin was, as far as Richmond's concerned, one of the great players. So no player, Jared, you were a great player. You didn't like it when someone, if you could go out and play a game on your own terms, you'd much rather that than have someone hanging off you all game.
Yep.
So. But the thing that they do really well, Richmond, with Martin is the moment he does get tagged, they put him forward. And so you've got to have someone that's also prepared to play in the cage, that fullback, or how do you swap it up? Because Dusty sometimes, I'm watching last year's grand final really closely, he just decides sometimes himself, I've had enough here, and he just meanders forward and lets it go. And all of a sudden the turnover comes, and next minute there he is. And it hasn't been planned. It's just the way, he's just a great, of the way that he can read the game. So you've got to have something very well planned. You've got to have someone, I think, big enough on him to beat him. And that's why DeBoer does a good job on him. And again, very well disciplined. And then you've just got to say, as you said, I don't care what happens. If you come off that ground with him having half the possession that he normally has and 1 to 2 goals instead of 4, it goes, and someone else can beat you, so be it. If Richmond are good enough, and they could be, good enough to have another player, but that I don't mind, but he's not going to be the reason we lose the game.
Can Rockliffe go to the square with him, Jared?
Look, you back the person in for a period of time. Yeah, and then if Dusty wants to stay there, well then, okay, you might have a plan.
You make
B.
a change, yep.
But you don't get caught on the transition. I hear this as if it's some sort of magical science. It's not. You stay with Dusty until the game settles down. Rockliffe can go with him in the square. Yep. I mean, he's a darn good player.
Yeah. So, and a proven inside mid that's strong.
Exactly. So I don't see it as complicated, but then you still got to lock him down. And once he's a forward, Dusty, he's got blokes kicking it at him. As a midfielder, and you've got the bear hug on him, you know, I think it is a lot easier to knock people on the head. The great Sam Mitchell, he's been knocked on the head half a dozen, or not half a dozen, but two or three times in grand finals. He only got, say, average 13 or 14. Lingy got him a couple of times. Hawthorn still got across the line because
Crowley
Crowley 13. Got him often.
Yeah.
So that look, it's a very, very interesting, I think, debate, and I'll be fascinated to see which way Ken Hinckley goes.
Yeah, exactly. No, they can come out and say all they like about the fact that we're not going to tag him. I'll guarantee you they've got the what if he gets going, we're going to do something about it. And the thing about Port Adelaide, well, they've got to be very careful here because you need a bigger player on him. Port, that line's not very big.
Mm.
And they're going to have to worry about, they've got two other boys to worry about in Lynch and Riewoldt, that you put the wrong player on either of those two and they will kick three or four goals on them. So this is going to be great to watch how the tactical side of it comes up. But gee, the one bloke, you know, we know how good Lynch is. The other guy, I'd be clamping down on Martin big time.
Hey, Jeppy, what about Port Adelaide? What will Damien Hardwick have in the back of his head that he's concerned about? I know that their contested ball has been dominant all year, but what do you think he'll be wanting to stop first and foremost?
Well, the first thing you want to do is get the crowd into play, I would say. The home ground advantage, which we didn't do last week, you know, when Collingwood were kicking some early goals. So if he can get Port into the game early and get the crowd into the game, all of a sudden the doubt comes into the mind. Oh, we're here in Adelaide, we're away from home, we got beaten last time we were here. All those sort of things come into play. So he'll want to get away to a good start. And he'll also want to get, you know, Dixon is, in his own right, a massive part to what they play like. So if they can get him into the game, they'd be very happy with a couple of good early touches from him. And I think they'd be really keen on their rucks. I think if they can get Lysett and the other young fellow up and going in the middle against Nan Curvis, that's where the game starts. If Port get that going, they get the game played in their forward half, then they are very hard to beat.
So Lysett looms as the bloke who's going to push back and help McKenzie out, unless they play West off, who can come off a wing and do that particular role. But clearly, I suspect it'll be the ruckman, which means that the big Nan Curvis, he'll want to push forward as well. What do you think that the Richmond coach, Damien Hardwick, will have in mind? Or is he just going there knowing that his game, if they play their best game, if they play their best system, it's going to end up in a grand final appearance?
Yeah, I think so. I think Richmond's once the ball starts moving, they don't want it to stop. They love to. You give them an extra in their back line. Like, you drop off, you give Grimes, all of them. They can all, Vlosten, they can all do it where they can get across and help. So I think the biggest thing that he'll be wanting is if he sees Port Adelaide coming up to an extra man at stoppage where the Richmond backs can set themselves up with an extra, that's where they get the ball on turnover and off they go. Last week was an outlier because they won stoppage out of the middle, which they haven't done all year.
Yep.
So I reckon Dimmer would have been sitting there going, well, I don't know what's going on here, but we're killing them out of the middle as well, so good luck trying to catch us now. But I wouldn't let, if I was Port, I'd be equalising that Richmond back line. I would not let Richmond have an extra back there. I'd be saying, righto, boys, we're going to take you one-on-one. And Grimes is not, you know, I thought Brisbane were brilliant against Grimes the other day when they played Cameron up the ground and kept taking him up the ground. Because Grimes is the real, to me, the absolute glue of that back line. He's tough, he's classy, he's as good a player in the back line in the competition.
And that's where you can have some faux wins. If you can win contested ball, you can win clearance. But if you're doing it by having an extra player there and all you're doing is kicking it to an outnumber in your forward line and Richmond's defence and they launch from half back and they kick goals, well, then really you're just playing their game.
Correct. If you can't afford to play. Richmond's game is set around finals. Now, Port say theirs is, and that's a guess to me because they haven't been in finals for a while, whereas Richmond's been the best for four. What's this, their fourth prelim in a row? Coming up for their their third or fourth. So we know their game stacks up. So at the end of the day, don't try to guess against that. Work out that we've got to match them. And I'm sure Kenny's got his KPIs that he'll be looking at very closely to see what's working and what's not working. And if it's going against what he wants, well, I think he has to equalise the game as quickly as he can. And then it's going to come down to the grunt of the real contest, and then we'll have a great game on our hands.
Who wins and why, Jimmy?
Look, I think Port win because they're home. I think they've done everything right. I really admire Hinckley and the pressure he's been under. You know, really, when you think about it, he was at the start of the year, if he didn't make finals, he was gone, basically. I'm sure they were serious about that. Also, the 150th year for Port, it's massive to Port Adelaide in South Australia, what this means to them. And I'm sure they've been selling this big time but let alone to finish on top and to have played as well as they have. So I think these boys will be, with the crowd behind them, will be really hard to stop. But if there's one, it'll be close, but I think Port just.
Up next, stay with us.
Jeppy part two.
Tim Jepp is going to give us the insight into the other big game, of course, and that is the Brisbane Lions versus the Cats. This is Sports Day. You're listening to Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Now let's turn our attention to the Saturday night game at the Gabba. Plenty of jibber-jabber up at the Gabba this week, and without question, Geelong go in with five losing prelim finals under their belt, and Brisbane go in not having played in a prelim final since the great Lee Matthews days. Let's welcome back Tim Jepp. Jeppy, this is a really exciting one. Brisbane are flavour of the month. I think they're everybody's second team just at the present time, but the Cats, well, they've got a big story to write as well.
Oh, gee, absolutely. What, Ablett's last game, possibly Harry Taylor's last game. And for Brisbane, well, it's a fairy tale, isn't it? I mean, I think Chris Fagan is the everybody's favourite uncle. I don't mean to be rude to you, Fags, but at the end of the day, I think everyone would love to see him have a win. It's, and I always remember when he first got the job, I thought, what are Brisbane doing here? And he's just been unbelievable for them. So much riding on it, but that's what prelims are about. But at the Gabba, gee, if you were Brisbane and you said, boys, you're going to play the prelim and it's going to be at the Gabba before the season started, I reckon they'd have taken that.
Jeppy, take the home ground advantage out of it. Would the West Coast Eagles be more wary of a fully fit Geelong in a prelim or the Brisbane Lions?
Again, I think because of where Geelong, you go back to history and we've seen Geelong play in big games, and Geelong have cut stuff up a few times too. Geelong, when they get going, are very, you know, look at the players, you know, your Dangerfields, your Ablett's, your Duncan's, even Blitzev's now become a great player. I mean, the way that they play, and they've got a bit of history on their side, whereas Brisbane's up and coming, you know, they come from nowhere. They're sort of, I think Harris Andrews is a star. Lockie's obviously going to win. Lockie Neal will win the Brownlow. And they've been tough. The one thing Brisbane have been, and I keep watching them play and I keep thinking, are they that good? The one thing they are is they're hard at it. And they're tough at the footy, and that's finals football. But gee, if Geelong, as we saw them last week, if Geelong get their game going, and Dangerfield has done some Dangerfield's game last week, but Dangerfield's going to be against Sydney. You reckon we weren't barracking very hard to Sydney that day when they put Dangerfield forward, and Sydney win, we finish fourth.
Yep.
And Dangerfield goes forward and puts on a clinic in about 5 minutes. You know, so again, and what has Patrick got to play for? Never won a prelim, never been the grand. The storylines in this game are unbelievable. So, look, it's going to be, again, a toss of the coin, which is brilliant for the comp.
Can I ask you about the ground and the disadvantage or the advantage? To me, Brisbane, it's an unusual year, clearly, because Geelong have played a lot of games on the Gabba. And I think, despite the fact that it's got fairly skinny pockets, it's only 3 metres shorter than the MCG at both ends, if you know what I mean. It's 6 metres longer, so it's bugger all, really, and it's exactly the same width. So I hear people saying it's a shorter ground. It's 3 metres shorter coming out of the square, out of the centre bounce. So I don't see it as an issue.
The stats will tell you that you win centre bounce there, you kick more. Well, Brisbane always are kicking more goals out of the centre than any team in the comp for the last few because they play at the Gabba. And we found it. We love the Gabba because that's one where we could kick goals from without a centre bounce. Mm. So we'd come out of centre bounce in the Gabba, and I think we were like, we couldn't believe it. Bang, bang, bang. But the thing that's surprising about what you just said, it is the MCG-like, but Brisbane don't play that spread game, you know, whereas Geelong do. Geelong will kick around like we do coming out of the back line. Brisbane play a shorter game, a long, skinny game on a skinnier ground. And they play on this massively wide ground. They will go wide at times and they'll go slow. But most times Brisbane, they like the post kick long down the line and follow it and get in behind it and play that keeping the ball in the forward line game, you know. So it's I think Brisbane will be thinking this is right up our alley. Sorry, Geelong will be thinking it's right up our alley because of the way they play, but it's Brisbane's home ground. So, you know, they love it. And what are they now? Are they 10-0 there this year or 9-0? What are they at the Gabba this year? Something like that.
Yeah, I don't think they've been beaten, that's irrelevant, really. You go to the casino and if there's 10 greens and you throw all your money, 10 reds and you throw all your money on the red and it comes up black, well, that's why... there's not a lot of so that successful punters.
Mutually exclusive events is what you're talking about.
Yeah. Can I ask you, go on.
Well, you also said that Geelong have lost how many prelims? Your last
five.
Well, okay, well, I'll tell you, if I'm Fagan, I'm going big time on let's put them under pressure early, boys. Let's get them starting to think that this is going to be number six, because you cannot let Geelong get their game going. Because once they do, we saw this with Collingwood last week. Even though I'm sitting watching and thinking, are Collingwood at any stage going to shut down their kicking game here? Are they at any stage going to go, they're going to kick short, lateral here, they go... And when they played us, Collingwood, they did everything they could to take away that short kick.
Yeah.
But it looked like last week, I'm like, have they forgotten what they're trying to do here? It was unbelievable. And Geelong were just back, bang, 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 bang. And the game was basically over at quarter time.
I always find that, Jared and Jeppy, that wanting to start early, a funny sort of complexity in the game and in sport. I mean, everyone ideally would love to start early. Yeah. Would love to start hot, but it very rarely happens, and it's noticeable when a team does come out hot.
Our key focus in 2018, we thought if we didn't do this, we couldn't win. We had to start well.
Yeah,
it was 5-0.
But how do you do it, Jeppy? Like, how do you actually make them start well?
Whereas last week against Collingwood, we actually came out, kicked the first goal, had a bit of control of the game. It's a matter of, whereas Geelong really got the whole game going for the whole quarter, you've got to absolutely maintain it.
Yep.
And normally in finals, it bounces back and forward, or you take your chances when you go forward. And I think early goals, like those three early goals at Cox kick, which were all against us, were within 25 metres directly in front. Whereas Geelong the week before who were they playing? Port. They didn't take their chances because they were wide. So whereas you want to kick your early goals, and whereas it's so thrown up in the air because it's a longer game. But I think with this shorter game this year, you've got to get going early, because if you don't, it's not long enough to get back in the game.
It's really interesting just looking at the numbers. They were a little bit sloppy in their defence. Brisbane allowing balls to be rebounded out of their forward line and got scored against, and they just dropped their zone back a little bit, according to those who say they know, but nevertheless, that's what I'm told happened. Their numbers have absolutely improved, and it may well also have been to do with their entries, that they're going a little bit wider with their entries rather than hitting the top of the goal square.
Yep, that's fair. And I think also both teams, watching Brisbane win and Port win, when they had to go, go quick, they went righto, bang, put the hammer down, and that's going to come. Whoever can get that going early, can go, righto, we're going now. And I thought Port in the second half, they did that in that last final, and I thought Brisbane the same in their last final. So keeping on attacking, really going hard at the contest, and playing your style. If you get your style going, and I'm sure both coaches know, they're like, right, now we're on. And so that's going to be the great chess match, is can you stop a side once it gets going? And that's the million-dollar question in final.
Lockie Neal, tag or no tag? Me is a tag.
Yeah, I'd have to. I must tell you this story about Lockie Neal. A couple of years ago, I was riding my bike slowly around the river, and I don't know Chris Fagan much at all, and I saw this bloke walking in front of me, and I thought, I know that walk, and I rode past, and I turned around and came back, and it was Fagan. And I don't really know him, and we've sort of been a bit at each other, and he was at Hawthorn, and we're sort of, who are you and who am I? And I said, oh, Fagan, Jeff. He goes, yeah. And I said, what are you doing in Perth? He said, actually, I'm over here to talk to a bloke. I think he's having second thoughts about coming. I said, what, from the Eagles? He goes, no, from Fremantle. And I said, who's that? And he goes, what do you know about Lockie Neal? And I go, you're kidding. Lockie Neal? He goes, yeah, I think we've got him coming over. And I said, my mail on him, he's just an unbelievable bloke and just a pro. I said, my God. And we just couldn't believe it that Lockie was leaving, And isn't it amazing what he's done for Brisbane? I mean, for a young fella, a small bloke from South Australia who everyone didn't rate when they first got him, he's going to win a Brownlow by whoever knows what. And God, who knows? He could win a premiership. So, yeah, look, again, he's too good. We saw you've got to stop him, because if you don't stop him, he'll go a long way for them winning the game.
Yeah, and I think he's gettable. I reckon four or five of the last six or seven games, they've put hard tags on him, and he's had some really marginal contributions. So,
is he gettable because, Jared, he's a little bit smaller and it's harder? It was like someone like Martin maybe harder to tag because he's bigger and stronger.
Well, I think
and
that's
can go forward.
Probably something to do, but I reckon Lockie Neal can go forward, and I think they
should use that more.
If I had one small criticism of Brisbane, I don't think that they've perfected that release like they should have, just having a very close look at Lachie Neale this year, that I think that he could swap with Charlie Cameron a fair bit. He could swap with Lincoln McCarthy just a little bit to get forward. He can take a mark. I've spoken to Ross Lyon about him a fair bit, Lachie Neale. He can grab them overhead. So it'll be interesting. I mean, it's he may be thinking, well, we'll just hold that when we really need it, and it might be this week. So we'll just wait and see how that unfolds.
Well, here's a stat. Here's a stat for you. It wasn't a quarter time against Richmond. He had not touched the ball.
That's right.
Now, you told me
he had two big quarters.
Lachie Neale's not going to touch the ball, and Martin's going to have had it nine times in the first quarter. Who wins the game? I would have gone to the TAB and put anything you like on Richmond. And all of a sudden, it spins around. Now, see, Bill Belichick, if he had Lachie Neale at zero possessions at quarter time, he'd even lock down further on him for the rest of the game, because he'd say, hey, listen, that's not going to keep going, that. We've got to make sure that keeps going. Yeah, what tends to happen to guys, he's having a bad one, and they sort of just let it go.
Yeah.
And anyway.
Well, you're right. The funny thing was, he wasn't tagged at all. He just did not get the football. Yep. It was an extraordinary event.
And the other funny thing was, Martin was killing him in the midfield, and all of a sudden they put Martin in the forward line in the second half. I'm like, what? Why? I mean, he was dominating, and I thought, oh, they must be. And then all of a sudden Martin went out of the game, and in back came Brisbane.
Okay, so who's going to win this one?
I think Geelong. Just.
Yep, me too.
Just a bit too much class all over the ground. I think it's going to tell when it really counts.
Yeah, my rationale was just sometimes I think you've got to earn your way there, and maybe they just just one or two players, and maybe
you did make the case well yesterday that they've gone from last to 14th to out in straight sets to prelim. Maybe it's a slow build.
I mean, sometimes you jump ahead. Sometimes you jump ahead. I mean, Hawthorn jumped ahead. Sydney jumped ahead.
Sure. Yeah.
West Coast Eagles jumped ahead. I reckon 2018 you thought you were in the mix, but 2019, 2020 was more likely to be your time.
Mm.
Especially with the boys out. But look, if I'm Chris Fagan, I'm talking, we're at the Gabba.
Yep.
You may never get this chance ever to play a home grand final. Who knows if that can bring, and I think one can bring home the bacon. And one player, I forgot to talk about it, another guy that I'd go really close to knocking over if I was Geelong, is Daniel Rich.
Mm.
I reckon you can take Rich out of the game, and he's one bloke. I'd sacrifice a half forward and say, you know what? I don't want Daniel Rich getting one handball received. I don't care if he beats you one-on-one, but no handballs received, no running down the ground. Let's take him from 20 possessions to 10. And again, it's amazing the number of times he'll slip in and there'll be some magnificent hit-up or kick a goal or use. He's just got a way about him. And I think he can be taken out of the game a bit easier than most.
Jeppy, it's been an enthralling night of previews. Looking forward to your grand final preview already.
Right, we'll see how we go. I might be 0-2 as well. I just hope they're great games of footy. Most prelims are, and I'm looking forward to them.
Who are you in the trade market for, Jeppy? Whoever you got your eyes on.
Yeah.
Anyone. We love good players to come to West Coast, so if you've got anybody in mind, let us know, please.
The part of the story that Jeppy left out about riding along the river and finding Chris Fagan, he was actually going to meet Scott Pendlebury about coming over and playing for West Coast. Good on you, Jeppy. We'll chat to you next week.
See you guys. Bye.
Tim Jepp there, Senior Football Advisor Adam Simpson at the West Coast Eagles. It's been fantastic to get his insights all year. This is Sports Day. More for Wilson Home, surely. Welcome back to Sports Day. It's all for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Well,
it's that time of the year again, man. Let's get down to
grand final week.
It's that time of the year when the greatest tipster on the planet starts to come to the fore. Now, I'm not talking about the grand final and the prelim finals. We'll give him a bit of a test out there just to see if he can get into some form. But there's no one better at this time of the year than Andrew Bensley.
Particularly when, as the races get bigger, his tips get better. That's how you know he's a good tipster.
That's right.
Don't worry about the Thursday afternoon at Warrnambool. This is Caulfield Cup, Cox Plate, Melbourne Cup time.
My understanding is, as we welcome you, Andrew, you've had the Windex out, you've given the crystal ball a nice old polish up, and it's just starting to get 100% clear. Welcome to you.
G'day, Jared and Sam. Good to talk to you. What a build-up it is. I'm used to it with Jared, Sam, but not from you. But looking forward to Caulfield Cup Day. We know it's all been different, but what an industry has played out over everything that's going around COVID, guys, just to have racing there. I know that the AFL had, time off, and the other sports have had time off, but the hard work of all participants to maintain racing right through it all. It's just been one hell of an effort by all. And now, you know, on the eve virtually of the Caulfield Cup, it stands proud. We know that there won't be any crowd or anything like that, but I think the audience watching TV is going to be extreme come Saturday.
It's been amazing watching the horses run down with their masks on AB. Absolutely sensational. It's actually made even a win by a nose even tighter.
Yes, no. I think the jockeys have been wearing the masks, Jared. But no, look, they've done everything that they possibly could, the racing industry. We've had only a couple of hiccups along the road that could have tested the whole system. But, you know, Racing Victoria put in lots of protocols. We've got jockeys that are only able to go to one track in the morning and ride track work and all sorts of different things, like Werribee this year with the internationals. You know, not the normal crew of media that can go there because we want to remain safe and keep safe for racing. So it's certainly been tested, but we're here on the eve.
Righto, enough of the niceties, AB. Let's get down to business, shall we, and get to your predictions for some of these big race days, because, you know, Jared and I were talking about Cox Plate Day, of course, on Saturday week, same day that a small game of football was happening. But before that, we've got to get through Saturday. Huge day across the country, Jared. You've got, of course, the Caulfield Cup.
Yes.
And then you've got the $15 million Everest in Sydney.
You got the
6.2 of that, by the way, goes to the winner, which I know is just another regular week for you, but 6.2 to the winner. We'll get to what's going on.
Is it called the Everest or the Peter Vlandys Cup?
Oh, very nice. I like that. We'll get to the Peter Vlandys Cup shortly. But how's the Caulfield Cup shaping up, do you think, AB? So much talk about Anthony Van Dyke. We know that very elegant the Kiwis is hotly tipped as well. How are you seeing it unfold?
Look, the draws made it really interesting, particularly with Anthony Van Dyke. This horse is a star. He's a Derby winner in England. We've never had a Derby winner run in a Caulfield Cup.
Yeah.
We've had place getters come here, but that tells us the quality, and that's why he's got top weight. But he will need an 11 out of 10 ride from Hugh Bowman from the wide draw. He's a horse that normally can ride up on the pace, and without getting too heavy into it, there doesn't look to be a lot of pace, early pace in the race. So Hugh might take the gamble of going forward with a horse like Prince of Arran, who's also drawn out wide. Look, it's hard, as I say, because we haven't been to Werribee. So you've got to take a lot of info from people that are inside stables, talking to them, and also people that are, you know, from Racing Victoria that are there. I think that Buckhurst for Joseph O'Brien has really settled in extremely well. The work that it's done at Werribee is spot on. Ben Mallum and Lloyd Williams have had a strong relationship with many cup opportunities in recent years. The horse will get a perfect run. I do like Buckhurst. He's going to be up on the pace. Master of Wine, from a local point of view for the Hawks racing team and Craig Williams, I think that its last run in the Turnbull has it set up perfectly for a Caulfield Cup. And again, like Buckhurst, will get a good run. And then horses down in the weights a little bit. And I like the run of Toffee Tongue in the Turnbull at Flemington. 51 kilos on its back for Michael D. I think that she was really strong to the line in her last run. And look, I can't ignore Anthony Van Dyke simply because of the quality. That leaves out the favourite, Very Elegant. It leaves out Avilius if the rain comes over the next couple of days. But I just like those horses that are drawn well, that will get the nice run without having to do any work at all.
AB, that is a bit of an answer along the lines of, if you ask me, who do you like in the prelim final? And I said to myself, well, I really like Port Adelaide. But I do like the chances of the Tigers. Brisbane's a really good thing, but don't forget the Cats. Who do you actually like in this particular race?
Get him off the fence.
I want him off the fence. I want you two wide.
Look, I've given you them. I like Buckhurst.
I want number one. Buckhurst, is it?
Buckhurst.
Right.
It's the top fancy. Joseph O'Brien, Ben Mallum. It'll be beating Master of Wine, and there'll be a pack of them behind that. Maybe Toffee Tongue. But I do like Buckhurst because I think that it's been brought for both cups. It's had a good prep, and it'll be sitting somewhere, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh there on the pace. So I do like it to win.
Well, that's a bit disappointing for us, Scoop, given that we went halves in a long-term bet on Prince of Arran.
I've heard that before, half bets.
Yeah, Scoop's paid and I'm prepared to take half the winnings.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's how it usually works. Yeah, the fact that he didn't give Prince of Erin a mention anywhere along the line doesn't fill me with confidence. I mean, I know he's drawn wide, but jeez.
Well, you've got good odds to take your bet, so good luck to you. I hope that the horse does win for you. The only thing for mine is that he does love coming to Melbourne, but it normally is the Melbourne Cup that he runs well in. But we'll wait and see. I wish you the best, and I also wish you the best, Jared, in getting half the money if the horse does win.
You won't find me for a couple of weeks if it does win, I'll tell you that. Hey, the Everest, the Tab Everest, which you can watch on racingnewsouthwales.com.au. Where do we start here, AB? There's so many horses to talk about. Nature Strip, Classique Legend, of course, Behemoth, we know, has got its own success story, but it's going to be a funny old race.
Look, the pressure is going to be very strong, and I was only thinking today, you know, in Red Zell's two wins, we always thought that there was good, genuine pace, and then Kieran McAvoy was able to lead and control. Is that going to be the case with James McDonald? Is Nature Strip going any good, or is he just off his peak? Mm. We're going to find out on Saturday, because there'll be a couple of horses putting pressure to him early. I do like Guy Tra, the South Australian. He's been slightly forgotten, given that he hasn't raced since his first win in Sydney. He's had a week or two off. He's had a barrier trial and a number of gallops. I just think that he's going to stalk that pace, and the way that he was able to win there for Gordon Richards, who's celebrating his birthday today. I think that Guy Tra wins. Classique Legend for McAvoy. He could make it 3 out of 4 if he wins on Saturday. Classique Legend's a grey horse who's a ball of muscle ready to go. And then I do like Behemoth because it'll be charging. It's got that race fitness behind it that we've seen in Melbourne. And of the Godolphin horses, Trekking's the one that has been forgotten, number 2 in the race, guys. Around $11 at the moment, $11, $12 in some of the places. It ran 3rd in the race when it was forgotten last year, and it's been solely aimed towards this race again. So they're my 4, but I think Guy Tra stalks the pace and wins it.
Is Gladys allowing anybody in at the track while she's still in power?
Yes, she's hanging on. She might be there on Saturday, hanging from the rafters. Right. They've got 11,000, Jared. Okay. They've got exemptions for that crowd. It's well down on what they'd normally, you know, around that 35,000-40,000 mark that they would get to a jam-packed Randwick. So it's nowhere near, but at least they've got some crowd there on Saturday.
Is there any chance, if Gladys decides to pull the pin, and it's unlikely, but you just never know what happens, that Peter Vlandys could take over New South Wales, given that he's basically running the joint anyway?
Yeah, no, look, he's, in all seriousness, because I know you like getting stuck into Peter Vlandys.
No, I like Peter. I've been one of his great fans, Scoop, haven't I?
Yes, it's true, unfortunately.
He has set up Sydney Racing, and therefore for mine, Australian Racing, because people overseas are not only coming for the Melbourne Spring, but they're watching the Everest on Saturday. I think promotional-wise, you know, the draw the other night at the highest point of Sydney, up on Sydney Tower, I mean, was the views look spectacular. So he throws things at it, Jared, and it's working an absolute treat. Everyone knows that it's Everest Day on Saturday.
So Caulfield Cup, Benz is tipping Buckhurst, which is the around the $11 mark, a good price. And Guy Tra, I think, is around the $6 mark, AB. So both pretty good value, but it is so, so hard to tip when it comes to these sort of races, particularly because of the year it's been. As we let you go, AB, you might as well tell us who's going to win the Melbourne Cup.
Yeah, too early for that, Sam.
We've got to get through that.
Yeah, we've got to get through Saturday, and there's a few other internationals. If we get outside that 5K zone, and I can get to Werribee, that will help us. But I'll leave you with one for Caulfield outside the Cup.
Ooh.
It's in the Ethereal, race 5, number 5, Silhouette, trained by Godolphin. John Allen takes the ride. She is a really nice filly who's just primed off that recent run at Flemington. So if you're looking for something outside the Cups, Caulfield, race 5, number 5, Silhouette.
Yeah, proven third up as well, around the $9 mark. Another good tip there from AB.
What do you think about Windstorm, race 8, number 9?
Windstorm, yeah, it looked going super, Jared. Yeah, no, it's if it gets a Willie Pike ride like he's been doing, Windstorm runs there and then goes to Sydney, Jared, for the Golden Eagle. So it'll be well forward there on Saturday.
He's riding that well, Willie Pike. He could ride a tractor home, you'd think.
As you leave us, Benj, give us your two prelim final winners.
I hope Brisbane wins, and I hope Port Adelaide wins.
I think a lot of Victorians feel the same way. Thanks, Benz. Andrew Bensley there, who'll be hosting, by the way, Grand Final Eve next Friday, which is obviously Cox Play Day. Really big race day.
That's the month he comes into his own.
More sports day ahead for Wilson Holmes. You're listening to Sports Day. It's all for Wilson Holmes. Before we wrap up the night, let's find a win-win for Betfair if we can, Jared. It just got me thinking, like we were talking about earlier in the week, the AFL Commission, we know the grand final that they want.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a win-win, really, if it is a Richmond-Brisbane victory. The win with Brisbane is that obviously it's a home crowd, gets Queensland involved in the game. And the win for Richmond is that it gets the rest of the neutrals involved. Not just, obviously, got the Richmond fans, but the neutrals will barrack for Brisbane, you would think. And the rest of the neutrals are just happy that
you're
in a really
everybody.
Good game.
Everybody's off the Tigers.
I would think, and they would relish in this. I would think that anyone who's not a Richmond fan this weekend and next weekend will be barracking against them.
Because I don't agree with that, Scott.
Really?
I think they'll be barracking vociferously against them. Yes, you're on the money.
This is a bit rude of me. Unless you're a Gold Coast fan, then you might be barracking for Richmond if it's Richmond Brisbane.
Yeah, the other win-win, I thought maybe Dan Andrews may come out and give us a 20-kilometre
radius
of room to move.
Why make it 5 to 20? Just get rid of the thing.
Well, it's a very good point, Scoot.
Just get rid of the thing, Jerry.
20 kilometres. It's
not one bit of science behind it.
No.
Not one.
No. But Dan is backing the science. So we worked that out, Dan.
I don't think the word win has come next to Dan Andrews in this. Anyway. Also, the win-win for punters this weekend, Betfair are taking zero commission on bets placed this weekend. So
that's a win-win.
Whether you're a big punter or a small punter, Jared, you might just be having a buck each way. Mm-hmm. You're going to get more bang for your buck this weekend because Betfair are not taking a commission. That is why you gamble with them responsibly, of course. 1-800-858-858.
How strong do you think the double, Brisbane into Lachie Neal, Saturday night into Sunday night? I mean, you got your first leg up. Your second leg, you would think, is the easy one.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still a little bit concerned about that,
whether or not
it's going to be one of the big boilers.
You know what, Jared? There would have been a couple of people, I reckon, before the start of the year that might have had that bet.
Yeah.
You know, Lockie could have won it last year.
Yep.
So he would have been a decent price, but, you know, he would have been one of the favourites, I mean. And then Brisbane, you'd have to see as a chance. How nervous would you be if you had that bet at the start of the year, knowing that it could all fall over in the last week, really?
Can you think of a bigger boil over in the Brownlow medal
if Lockie didn't win it?
And I think most people,
Judd Swan,
possibly
in 11, I think.
But I reckon if you go back even further, and it pains me to say I can go back even further.
We're not talking late 80s here, are we?
I'm talking earlier than that. I think it's 70s. And there was a stink at the Brownlow.
A stink?
There was a stink at the Brownlow. The Tigers got up absolutely miffed.
Who won?
Keith Gregg won.
And who should have won?
KB missed out.
Oh, no.
I'm going to try, and we should try and get Ashley Brown on to talk about this, because it was a really big, big boil over.
Stink.
It was a stink.
It's for spit water, high pressure cleaners and tools. Well, that's it.
I noticed you didn't tell him that you were barracking against the Tigers.
I didn't say I was.
Oh.
You didn't. I've never said this week on record that I'm barracking against Richmond.
Folks, you all know, and I know, Scoop is desperate for the Tigers to lose.
I would like a good game, Jared, which Brisbane just get over the line.
That's it for the week. We're back Monday as we launch into what promises to be an incredible grand final build-up.
So you're tipping Port and Geelong?
I'm tipping Port and Geelong.
Okay. I'm tipping Port.
I'm tipping Port and Geelong, yes.
I'm tipping Port at Brisbane.
Okay, we're going to have Lachie Neal, we hope, on Monday night.
That's exciting.
Unless it's a big boil over.
And a stink at the Brownlow.